This webcast is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Jacobs Music Company is the proud sponsor of Between the Keys with Jed Distler. Information on any of the products or services that Jacobs Music offers is available on their website, www.jacobsmusic.com. We just heard music by Charles Valentin Alcon, a little scherzetto from his 48 Esquisse. This enigmatic composer has long been a specialty of the internationally acclaimed virtuoso Marc-André Hamelin, who not only was the pianist in that recording we just heard, but he is also our featured artist this hour on Between the Keys. This is Jed Distler, artist in residence for the Classical Network, and welcome. Marc-André Hamelin and I go way back. We recently caught up at a diner in Midtown Manhattan, and I recorded our conversation, which I will share with you momentarily. But why don't we have some more music first? Let's hear the presto finale from Haydn's Sonata No. 32 in B minor. Thank you. Presto finale from the Sonata No. 32 in B minor by Joseph Haydn, the pianist Marc-André Hamelin. Let's go now to music by the Swiss composer Émile Robert Blanchet, who lived from 1877 until 1942. He wrote three short pieces inspired by visiting Turkey, and from this set we will hear Au Jardin de Vieux Serret, Marc-André Hamelin.
Thank you.
Marc-André Hamelin at the piano, playing music by Émile Robert Blanchet. That was Au Jardin du Vieux Serré. Marc and I were hoping that we were going to be able to convene at my studio, but during his visit this time in New York, scheduling logistics on both his part and mine made it difficult to do so, so we wound up meeting at a diner, of all places, in Midtown Manhattan, where I recorded our conversation on a portable machine. And as a result, you're going to hear clicking glasses and people yelling out their orders in the background. But still, we managed to cover a good amount of ground in our conversation, as well as catch up on stuff, as old friends tend to do. So let's go now to my conversation with Marc-André Hamelin, November 13th, 2018. Enjoy. Marc-André Hamelin, I am so happy to see you. We are in a restaurant in Midtown Manhattan. Do you do a lot of interviews in Midtown?
That's probably the first, actually, the first time I do this.
Well, I'm honored. When did we first meet? I was trying to rack my brain about it. I don't know if it was 84, 85, 86. It was something like that. We were standing online. We were together at the Lincoln Center Library.
Oh, that's probably when they used to have these marvelous library sales.
That's exactly
which
it.
Which is a thing of the past now.
Right, and you were on the lookout for
anything.
Yeah, they used to have these marvelous sales, and
oh, they used to have anything there. I mean, so
books.
I got
scores.
So much rare sheet music.
You have talked about your interest in off-the-beat repertoire quite a bit, and I know that this more or less stemmed from your father, and maybe could you talk to me a little bit about that?
My dad really, he was a pharmacist by profession, but music was really the overwhelming concern in his life, the overwhelming love. It's very remarkable because it came absolutely out of nowhere with him. He had perfect pitch, almost perfect actually. He couldn't recognize pitch in old scratchy 78 recordings, but otherwise, you know, he could hear and he could improvise at the piano. But this talent came out of nowhere because his parents were not musically inclined at all. And as far as I know, the distant family, the ancestors were not either. So I don't know where it came from. And I did inherit that perfect pitch and the taste and love for music.
He was very interested in a lot of arcane scores and off the beaten track things.
In a way, perhaps, but it's a little bit misleading when you read that about me because he discovered a lot of these things right along with me.
Oh, I see.
He was at the time in correspondence with a chap named Donald Garvelman,
who
authored a lot of reprints. A lot of interesting reprints. He did a Scriabin anthology, and he included a piece of Sarabji in an anthology of arrangements of the Minute Waltz.
Yes.
And that's what awakened my dad's curiosity about him. But it didn't go very far. I think that curiosity was mostly transferred to me.
You kind of ran away with it.
Yeah, and this was this anthology came out in around 1969, 1970, I think. But it wasn't until 1977 that I really got curious, and I ordered the score to Opus Clavicem Ballisticum, which is Sorabji's main claim to fame.
Yes.
And coincidentally, it is the year that it came out of print. It went out of print.
On disc, you've really been creating what really amounts to a legacy of a lot of repertoire that falls outside the so-called standard canon, like Godofsky, Villa-Lobos, Percy Grainger, the Dukas Piano Sonata.
Well,
yet, at the same time, your concert repertoire tends toward more of standard, familiar work.
Generally, yes. I'm glad you're saying that because it's a misconception.
And you are gravitating more toward that in your discography. Now, I want to ask if you look upon your recording and your concert activities as separate entities, or how are they mutually beneficial?
Well, one ends up benefiting the other, I think, inevitably, but I'm a very poor planner. Of course, I should perhaps plan my concert program so that they promote my recordings, you know, but one also needs to play things through before one records. And I admit that a lot of my recordings were done without actually playing the repertoire in public. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of Percy Grainger, for example. Mm-hmm. Admittedly, that's not terribly profound. One doesn't need years of experience with it, perhaps.
Yeah.
But at least I could have played it a little bit, you know, to make it easier for myself, perhaps, in the recording studio. Yeah.
On the other hand, sometimes this repertoire doesn't really lend itself to the kind of halls that you're playing in.
Yeah, and Grainger doesn't. Grainger is a very interesting case because it's absolutely stunningly crafted music as far as pianistically, and also as far as the exploitation of the basic folk material. But it hasn't survived very well in the concert hall.
Probably because it tends to be very thick and it kind of, the textures sort of cancel each other out in a certain way.
I don't really find that, but I think it's because people dismiss it as light.
I don't think so. I think even the transcriptions have a profundity in a certain way. I think Jewish medley, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I think the Rosenkavalier transcription.
Oh, that's a masterpiece.
I agree with you. I agree with you. But speaking of transcriptions, on your Carnegie Hall program, you're going to be performing a group of songs by the French popular composer and singer Charles Trenet. And these are in arrangements by Alexis Weissenberg. And maybe you could tell me a little bit about how these came about. How did you...
I recorded them in 2007, but I haven't played them very much in public. A friend of mine, the late John Skinner, who was a great collector of scores and a great pianophile who lived in Portland, Oregon, alerted me to the existence of these recordings by Alexis Weissenberg of six songs by Trenet and his own arrangements. And it was on a little 45 that came out, I think, in 1956.
Yes, on the Lumen label.
Lumen label, exactly.
Yeah.
They were done at the end of, a Liszt sonata session, you know, as kind of a throwaway. He made me a copy of those, and I was smitten, really. And it took me a little while, but after a while, I set out to try to write them down, because at the time, I thought there was no score.
Oh.
I relied on my ear, on my pianistic ability, on my composing ability, on also some slowing down software, and that did the trick. Some years later, I got a very nice surprise email from Maria Weissenberg, who was his youngest daughter, saying that she had found four of the six songs, arrangements, in manuscript.
Oh, I see.
It was a very illuminating discovery, because it answered some questions about my notations from the recording, but also it told me that he often didn't stick to what he had written. So the idea was born to publish these, and there is a very enterprising young publisher in Japan right now who is putting them out on December. They'll be available this December 10th in a wonderfully produced edition, which I edited. Finally, I mean, so many people have been asking me for these arrangements over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And their wish is going to be granted, finally. The arrangements are tremendously creative. I wish he'd done more. He was actually quite active as a composer, but never promoted himself, really. I mean, he wrote at least two musicals that I know of. Martha Argerich's festival in Lugano produced one of them in 2008, actually.
Thank you.
That was a song entitled Coin de Rue by the French composer and popular singer Charles Trenet, arranged by Alexis Weissenberg and transcribed by Marc-André Hamelin from the original Alexis Weissenberg recording. And that was released in 2007 on a CD entitled In a State of Jazz. And before that, we heard my conversation with Marc-André Hamelin, which we will return to momentarily. This is Jed Disler, artist in residence for the Classical Network, and you are listening to Between the Keys, where we are featuring this hour the internationally acclaimed pianist Marc-André Hamelin in both words and music. Here are two poems by Alexander Scriabin, his Opus 71, Marc-André Hamelin at the piano. Music of Alexander Scriabin, his two poems, Opus 71, with pianist Marc-André Hamelin. Mark's Carnegie Hall concert included music of Robert Schumann, and from Schumann's Fantasiestück, Opus 12, let's hear the intense, compact movement entitled Grillen. Thank you. That was Grillen from Fantasiestück Opus 12 by Robert Schumann, pianist Marc-André Hamelin. Marc has been composing very steadily for some time and has recorded a good number of his original piano works. Here's the first piece from his suite entitled Con Intimissimo Sentimento. It's a Lendler. Marc-André Hamelin, composer and pianist. Music by Marc-André Hamelin, the first piece from his suite entitled Con Intimissimo Sentimento. That was a Lendler, and Marc-André Hamelin was at the piano. Let's return to our conversation that recently took place in a mid-Manhattan diner over lunch.
It seems that over the past maybe 20 years, maybe I would say more, that the composer-slash-pianist or pianist-slash-composer tradition has been kind of coming back. I mean, certainly the art of transcribing is really quite fashionable.
Yep.
It really was not in the 50s and 60s.
Oh, yeah, and even up until rather recently. I'd say in places like Europe, especially France, I mean, it's still a little bit tough going.
Mm-hmm.
And it always surprises me how many places geographically don't really accept Liszt, for example, someone like Liszt for who he was and what he was. Whether you like him or not, you have to recognize that he is one of the most original creators in the entire canon of music history. Think of what he gave us.
When we still don't realize everything he did because he is still kind of a polarizing figure, whereas somebody like Chopin, his contribution is very secure, but Liszt was, he had a very fluid kind of personality and creativity.
Yes.
In a way.
But the thing is, I think it's unfair to Liszt to say that he was only a virtuoso or whatever. I think if you're going to make an assertion like that, you are required to say at least the same thing about Paganini.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard a bad word about Paganini? I haven't. And if there was gratuitous virtuosity, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, of course, you find it there.
Yeah. And you have been composing more mm-hmm. and more.
Well, more and more I don't know, but it's been sort of steady. I've slowed down a little bit in recent years, but coincidentally, this is the time when I'm finally getting commissions.
Great.
So I've had to keep up. But there's always something, you know. I have three commissions going right now.
What do you listen to at home? In the non-classical world, you have quite fascinating taste, and you've turned me on to a lot of things.
Such as?
There's a composer who did these Shostakovich mashups.
Oh my god.
I think you had mentioned these like years ago to me. Like combining all the Shostakovich symphonies.
Oh yes, to me that is glorious. That is so fascinating. He's a British guy who goes by the moniker V/VM, or at least he did. Mm-hmm. And now he's got other personae, you know, because he does completely different kinds of music now. He put out a CD which isn't available, unfortunately, any longer. It's called the Dmitri Shostakovich The Missing Symphony, and he decided to just put all 15 Shostakovich symphonies at the same time and adjust the lengths of each so that they would all fit within the mean length of the recording, whatever recordings he was using, which in this case is 48 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's just such a wonderful world to be in for 48 minutes, you know. And, you know, a few of the symphonies are vocal, so every once in a while you hear a voice sticking out of the wilderness. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is just so fascinating. I mean, I listen to a lot of avant-garde things, you know, noise even, free improvisation.
I remember.
But yeah. So many other things too. I mean, and regular classical music as well.
Speaking of mashups, I would say the ultimate mashup composer was Carl Stalling, who we both have a fascination with. Because he wrote original music for the Warner Brothers cartoons, and he would always incorporate pop songs out of nowhere.
And classical pieces.
I remember watching some of these Bugs Bunny cartoons as a kid, and Bugs would just launch into song, and of course, you know, as a kid, you don't know any of these, but these were of the moment pop hits from the 40s, King Faraday. And where does that come from? It's completely
The greatest one is peeping through the knothole of Grandpa's wooden leg. Where do they build the shore so near the ocean? Go get the axe, there's a flea in these
ears. A boy's best friend is his mother. I don't remember Bugs singing that.
It's a Yosemite Sam cartoon.
I have to check that
I saw
out.
It just the other day. But the best reference I think I've ever seen, and my eyes just bugged out when I heard it. Yosemite Sam and Bugs Bunny are about to have a duel in a train car, and suddenly I hear part of the Inflammatus from the Rossini Stabat Mater.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. You've got to dig pretty deep for that.
Have you ever thought about reducing a Roadrunner cartoon score for solo piano? Would that work?
I started writing a cartoon piece once, but it didn't go anywhere.
I think we discovered our mutual love for the Warner Brothers cartoons when you were doing a run-through of a program, and I came to the run-through, and we both had on Bugs Bunny shirts. And then we sat at the piano, and we were going back and forth, trading dialogue from cartoons, and I thought I knew my Bugs Bunny lore pretty well, but I was no match for you. And then,
watching cartoons all the time at that point. You know.
And I would be remiss if I did not ask you, for our audience, if you could do your extraordinary Marvin the Martian imitation.
But why would you ever want me to do that? Mm-hmm. Yes, I have just been developing the Illudium Pu-36 Explosive Space Modulator.
Hey, excuse me, Doc. Can you give me a U-Dry flying saucer? I gotta get back to the Earth.
Well, the Earth will be gone in just a few seconds.
Oh,
Jed, we only have half an hour.
I want to ask you, what pieces of music have you not performed or recorded that you look forward to doing?
I'm preparing in a month. I'm going to do the first six Feinberg sonatas.
Oh, wonderful.
Which I've been wanting to do for a long time.
Samuel Feinberg, yeah, who is known a lot as a pianist.
As a teacher.
But
almost all of his music for the entire 20th century was just not available in the West, save for three things that were published by Universal Edition in Vienna. And even those went out of print.
I think this will certainly help create a new audience.
Seriously, looking into the first six sonatas, there's 12 of them, as you know. They're not immortal music, but they definitely need to be heard.
I think you've really made so much of this repertoire available, and I think you've inspired a lot of people to investigate this repertoire.
Well, it seems to be that way. When I find that out is in CD signings, when young pianists bring me their scores to sign. And I often see Alcon and Mettner.
Mm.
Especially Mettner, actually, which gives me no end of pleasure. Because Mettner was a fantastic creator, a genuine musical soul, and a lot of people don't think much of him because they haven't taken time to get to know him. And with Mettner, you have to take the time.
He's a composer that doesn't come at you 100%. You really have to meet him halfway. In a sense, it's like Fauré.
Another extraordinary musical soul.
I think so. And also, Mettner is very linear. And because of the linear logic, it doesn't always... He never goes for effect.
No, he's one of the most sincere musicians who ever lived.
Even when the writing is very dense and massive, there's always a linear logic and trajectory to it. I think certainly in the Night Wind Sonata.
And a conducting thread, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are still people who think that the Night Wind Sonata is this incomprehensible mess. But every time I sit down and work at it, I mean, I want to bow to it. You know, any composer could learn so much from just studying that piece. I mean, the control of the material is awe-inspiring.
If you could meet only one musician from the past could never have otherwise met, who would that be?
Well, because he was probably the most enigmatic to me, I would tend to say Beethoven. Although I probably wouldn't get any answers out of him, I suspect. Because I have a feeling that his philosophy would have been, you know, let the music be what it is and affect you the way it affects you, and that's it. I'm not going to say anything about it. Could be wrong, but...
Mark, I so appreciate you taking time. I know this is a busy time in New York.
Quite right.
And you have a recital coming up in a few days, and I look forward to it so much. And thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
A conversation with Mark Andre Hamelin, and I think our talk really conveys his absolute passion and commitment to bringing important yet often unknown music to the public, and it also shows his amazing sense of humor. So now you know that we are both Warner Brothers cartoon maniacs. But on a more serious side, here's an exquisite piece by the composer we were talking about, Nikolai Mettner, whose music Mark has championed on the highest artistic level for many, many years. This is a work called Primavera.
Thank you.
Music by Nikolai Metner, Primavera, with pianist Marc-André Hamelin. Since Mark and I were speaking earlier about Franz Liszt, I thought it would be fitting to end this program with the tarantella from Liszt's triptych, Venezia e Napoli. This performance of the tarantella, I think, simply oozes with fire and elegance and a level of virtuoso refinement that I think really transcends the piano, and it goes directly to the heart of the music. Marc-André Hamelin at the piano.
Thank you.
Tarantella from Venezia e Napoli by Franz Liszt. A stunning performance, I think, by our featured artist, pianist Marc-André Hamelin. I'd like to give special thanks to Matthew Herman for helping to bring Mark and I together for our meeting this month. And I also thank you for tuning in. This is Jed Disler, artist in residence for the Classical Network, and I look forward to us being together next week at this time for Between the Keys. This show is an exclusive production of the Classical Network and WWFM.org.